the other black six I know were ready and willing to sort of like just immerse themselves into Sikhi, which also means taking on parts of Punjabi culture, if we're being honest. And I was like, hey, I see you, Punjabi culture. I respect it. I love it. There are a lot of parallels. There are a lot of overlaps. But also, Black American is a culture, and it's mine, and I don't want to lose it.
Hey guys, it's Kat, and we're here today with Smalls to talk about the intersections of being Black, woman, and sick.
Hey y'all.
So you're Black, you're a woman, and you're sick. First of all, what is a sick? Like, what does that mean?
What is a sick? So a sick is basically a student, and it's somebody who practices Sikhi.
Okay.
Or commonly, especially here in the West, known as Sikhism, but it's actually Sikhi is the proper name for it, though, if you say either.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've always said Sikhism, so that's interesting.
Yeah, so Sikhism is what the colonizers brought over, right? But Sikhi is how our gurus always referred to it. It's how it's referred in our text and amongst us, mostly Sikh, yeah, or Sikhi.
Interesting. So what is Sikhism? Obviously, we're probably not as familiar with it in the West as we are with Christianity. So if you could sum it up, how would you sum it up?
Ooh, okay, so it's a monotheistic religion, right? It's about 500 years old, and it's one of the five major religions, though of the five, it's probably the least known, the least popular, and the most misunderstood. We're often mistaken for Muslims, especially if we're wearing a turban. And most Sikhs are brown. It was actually founded in India.
Okay.
So in the northern part of India and Punjab, right? So it was actually brought to the West or introduced to the West by Yogi Bhajan, who was a yogi master who came out here to LA. And of course, there were already Sikhs living out here in the West, but he brought it out here and actually began teaching it. And so that's sort of how it was introduced to folks who weren't just Indian.
So you weren't raised with this religion?
Oh, no. I was raised Christian. I was born I was born into a Christian family, a Black Christian family, Baptist. Which I think is an important distinction to make. But I was raised Baptist in California, so it's a little bit different than
okay,
Southern.
So you're like a little chill.
A little bit chill, progressive.
Almost non-denominational.
Yeah. Like, it was okay to wear pants in church, and it was a little bit more chill. It was a very youth-driven, youth-focused, so... But I grew up with Christianity, and I left that in about 2010, actually.
Interesting. So, what drew you to another religion?
Well, I left because Christianity wasn't working for me. I had been trying for years to sort of resolve and reconcile some things, some issues that I had with it, and I couldn't. I was talking to all kind of people, my pastor, my dad, took some theology. I've always gone to Catholic school. So, went to a Catholic school.
So you were raised Baptist, but you went to a Catholic school.
Yeah.
And now you're sick.
Yeah. Well, actually, I went to a Christian Lutheran, then Christian again, then Catholic, and then a Catholic university.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But so that gave me a lot, and even in high school, I took a world religions course, which is how I was first introduced to Sikhi. And in college, theology courses were required, so I was very, sort of exposed to a lot of things, and I just couldn't reconcile a lot of things. So I left it thinking I would just do the I'm spiritual but not religious. Mm. I would go that route. But it didn't really work for me. Or I didn't feel like it was working for me. I wanted more. I wanted community. I wanted some structure. I wanted fellowship. I finally had the relationship with God that I wanted, but I wanted the rest of it. The stuff that I remembered from Christianity that I loved, going to church and being around people and having somebody to talk to and having Bible study. So I spent about 3 years looking for a new religion, just sort of trying on religions for size.
So wait, how many religions did you try on?
I don't even remember. So I tried Islam, Buddhism, Taoism. Of course, I looked into some other ones, but I knew right off the top, those aren't gonna be for me, Jainism and Rastafarianism and...
What did trying on these, what did that look like?
It looked like a lot of research, a lot of questions, a lot of learning, and then for the religions where I said, oh, this might work. So Islam was a really close contender, right? And I practiced that for quite a while. But again, I got to the point where there were just things about it I couldn't reconcile.
Mm. Like what?
So a lot of the things around gender.
Okay.
and a lot of the like rules and rituals, and I had left Christianity in part because of those rules and rituals. I felt like they got in the way of my relationship with God. Mm. Like we were so busy, you have to find a church home, and you have to do this, 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 and this. And trying to find that church home just led to more frustration. And I looked up one day and realized like, I'm so like deeply embedded to like the religion part of it that I have no idea where my relationship with God is. Like it wasn't at all where I needed it to be. So Islam got me there, but there were still a lot of like rules and rituals that got in the way. There were a lot of things about gender I wasn't vibing with. But that was the closest one. And then I had like almost given up. I was like, I can't go back to Christianity. I don't know. And I'd given up, and I was just kind of playing around online one day, and I Googled like, what religion should I be, or how to know which religion, something like really silly. And a quiz popped up, and it was like, which religion are you? Like, which religion should you be? And it was a list of like questions. It was a little bit more sophisticated than a BuzzFeed quiz. And it, with all your like ideologies and your core beliefs and your values and what's important to you, and not just like do you believe, but how important is this belief to you? Mm. Is this something that is like negotiable for you or not negotiable? And Sikhi, I took the quiz multiple times because I was so surprised by the results, but Sikhi was always in like the top three. Mm. And I looked it up. I was like, Sikhi with the brown folks and the turbans? Like, I don't know. Really? That's the one that's like for me? And I read it. And even in reading it, I just kept going to other sources because I couldn't believe, like, it sounded too perfect. Mm. Like, on paper, I was like, you know, one of the major principles has to do with justice. Or something that's really important, I should say, for Sikhs and for Sikhi is justice, social justice, social equity, equality among genders and race and creed and even religion, religious freedom, and believing that, you know, there's no one right way. Like, you must live this way, you must believe this to get here. Sikhi wasn't about that. It was really, really focused on your relationship with God, who you were as an individual, what you brought, like you being a good person, being honest, and then social justice, which seemed, I was like, somebody designed this religion for me, I'm pretty sure. And so I looked at the quiz and I looked at the results, I studied and I learned and I read, and I said, I think this is it. Like, it felt right, you know? Like, it was, I think it was, like, really figuring out other aspects of my identity where I finally, when I heard the word or when I heard the term, it felt right, you know? And that's the same thing that happened with Sikhi. But I was still so skeptical, and I was also worried about the lack of diversity and how all of this would play out in practice, like, in practice, in real life, that I said, I'm gonna practice this for a year before I even tell anybody.
Interesting.
So I told my close friends, and I started practicing. I got about 8 months in, and I was like, nah, I'm sold. Like, it's official. Like, let's do it.
And so, like, what about it appealed to you? Like, the social justice, I get all that. Like, but I guess it's, there's other religions, I'm sure. Like, Buddhism, I know, is, like, very, from my understanding about that, why that over, like, Buddhism?
Right. So Sikhi was founded at a time during, like, a ton of oppression in India, right? And it was our founder Guru Nanak sort of began this journey of really sculpting this religion and shaping this religion as a response to what was going on. And there was a lot of religious oppression. There was a lot of like caste oppression, a lot of social injustice, a lot of social inequalities. A lot of people practicing and doing a lot of rituals that weren't making them better people necessarily. They were just doing them because you needed to be doing them. And so, in the sense, so I know you said Buddhism. So for Christianity, I like to compare it to Christianity because that's the one I'm super familiar with. Mm. It seems to be a bit more passive.
Okay.
Being
a good person, you mean?
Yeah, well, being a good person, but also the Bible talks about turning the other cheek. You know, somebody does something to you, if you see something happening, pray about it. It's like a little bit more passive.
Oh, I see. Instead of like action, it's very like, well, you know, just let it roll off the back of your.
And I know that there's the scripture, you know, faith without works is dead. But just in terms of the emphasis, there was much more emphasis on not just action and not just living right and being a good person, but in fighting for others, which I've felt like that was my purpose since I was nine. Just having sickle cell, having a disability, and being an advocate starting so young, I've always felt like that was my purpose, like serving other people, advocating for other people, defending other people, as well as myself, right? So So that's really what appealed to me, that it was like, you know, one of the five Ks, as they call it, part of the Sikh uniform, especially if you're Khalsa, is a weapon. It's a sword. And that's to defend people. That's if you see something happening, yeah, you're supposed to step in. You're supposed to be, you're not just a bystander. You don't sit back and just pray about it. You actively go and you do something. You defend that person. You stand up for that person. Like I said earlier, a lot of times Sikhs are mistaken for Muslim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't say, oh, I'm not Muslim. Don't harm me, right? Because we shouldn't be persecuting anyone anyway, right? But that to me just kind of just shows like the thought process when you're practicing Sikhi. It's not about saying, hey, I'm not Muslim, leave me alone. It's like, okay, I'll take this, but also I need to do something about this.
Hearing you talk, I'm thinking, because I was raised very Christian and I went to Christian private school, like, so I was deep into it. And I remember the feeling that I had about religion at the time, because not only was I Christian, but like when I went to secular school, you know, because that's how I thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, I was really preachy, and I was preachy really on the basis of, I have the truth. This is the absolute truth.
Absolutely.
There is no other truth.
Yeah.
And that's that. And as great as it would be if things were another way,
yep,
this just,
yep,
is the truth.
Just like religious elitism.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, like, hearing you talk, you know, you're talking a lot about finding something that appeals to you or fits within your worldview. I guess, how do you feel about, because I guess, like, the feeling I had in Christianity was very, like, you know, you may feel this way, but the truth is this.
But this is the right way.
This is the way.
Yeah.
You know, how do, like... And I guess there are people who could hear you talk about religion and think, well, you know, you're just trying to find something that suits you in your worldly way of viewing things and not necessarily what is objectively true. So how would you sort of respond to people who might have that reaction?
I would say you're exactly correct. That's exactly it. Because that's what Sikhi teaches. I know in Christian proselytizing, right?
Yeah.
Mission work and going out and teaching and spreading the good word is paramount to being a good Christian, right? To being like a faithful servant. The problem with that is that if you take the world into consideration, cultures are so different.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's so different. Like they're, I don't believe, and I never have. That's the thing. Even when I was Christian, even when I was deep into it, I always had a problem with that part of it because I never felt like this is the only right way. And if you do not go this way, if you do not do these things, if you do not believe this, if you do not know Jesus, you are going to burn in a fiery pit forever. That never really worked for me because I thought, well, what about people who never have the opportunity to hear about Jesus or God or Christianity? You're telling me you're telling me on one hand, God created the world and it is as God wants it. But then God would make it so that there's this whole sect of people who don't even have a chance to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So those things, they never really gelled with me. And in fact, Sikhi teaches the opposite, religious freedom. So in our religious text, in our scriptures, there's actually parts of it are from Muslim saints and Hindu saints. So it's not just Sikhi. It's not just Sikh leaders and Sikh saints. So that was, and this is the thing, like when people ask me like why Sikhi, literally everything about it, like the religious freedom being such a big part it's a major thing, you know, like the fact that you could be Christian and this person could be Muslim and I can see value in all of those religious practices. Because ultimately at the end of the day, I really believe most religions have the same like core beliefs, right? Especially monotheistic religions. We have the same core belief where you believe there's a higher power, you believe there's some type of supreme being, and then like how you go about getting to where you want to go, whether it's rebirth or heaven or whatever, it's generally the same idea, right? That's what the religion is about. And so Sikhi just says that there's more than one way to do that. There's more than one road to take to get to where you're trying to go.
So not most Sikhs aren't black.
Most Sikhs are not black.
Okay.
That was actually when I realized like, oh, I think this might be the religion for me. That's literally the first thing I Googled. Black Sikhs, African American Sikhs, like every variation of that. I was like, I need to know because I only saw brown Sikhs. I only, from as long as I've known about Sikhi, I only knew about Indians practicing Sikhi. And though, you know, it says right there in the text that anybody is welcome, anybody can practice the religion, I didn't see anybody who looked like me.
Have you had any people who are brown who have seen that you've been practicing this religion and had like a negative reaction to it, maybe even accused you of like cultural appropriation or something like that?
Ooh, cultural appropriation, no. However, there have been black people wearing turbans who have been accused of cultural appropriation, which is mind-blowing. So the thing is, in India in general, like, for Indian culture, for Black American culture, even African culture, there are a lot of overlaps. There are a lot of parallels.
Well, there are Black people in India, right?
Black people in India.
That's a whole thing.
That's a whole thing, including the city folks. There's just a whole like there are Black people in India.
Yeah,
absolutely. But so I haven't personally been accused of cultural appropriation. Usually, actually, what happens, even if I'm wearing my kata, which is a steel bracelet that Sikhs wear, and it's pretty distinct in design. There's not one design, but Sikhs usually recognize it, right? So what they usually think is like my friend gave it to me. Even if I'm wearing my kata and like my turban, they still don't think I'm Sikh. They think, oh, who tied your turban for you? Oh, did your friend, is that why you're wearing it? Like, you know, so I get a lot of like jokes and kind of like downplaying it. And if I tell them I'm Sikh, it still seems like they're like, right, okay, sure, you are Sikh. Because of what I found is that for a lot of brown people, it's incredibly shocking to find out that there are black Sikhs. Even brown people.
Why do you think that is?
I think partly just because there's so few of us, but also because it's a very like, I don't want to call it a closed religion because we definitely preach and teach that all are welcome. However, the religion is written in a script, in a text that is specific to the religion. It's called Gurmukhi. So I don't read or speak Gurmukhi, right? So I have to use English translations. Those are not available everywhere, right? And so before Yogi Bhajan, folks were coming up, and because we don't proselytize, right, we're not going out trying to recruit people. It just kind of it tends to kind of stay insular. Like I know probably all of the black Sikhs in LA. Like,
oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like we tend to go to the same gurdwara. And even if we don't, we kind of know each other. And I know that when I immediately went to my gurdwara and I found my mentor, I saw her, she's a black woman. And I saw her and I said, she's gonna be my mentor. And I didn't say that to her, but she saw me and I said, I'm Sikh, but I'm looking for a new gurdwara. I don't feel like comfortable or welcomed at my other one. I was the only black person at the other one that I was going to. And every time I went, I got stared at. I definitely didn't feel welcome. So I went to this new one. It's much more diverse. And she sort of immediately took me under her wing because there's a lot of frustration being like at that intersection of black and Sikh because Sikhi teaches equality, right, across race, across gender. So the party line, unfortunately, tends to be like, we're Sikhs, we don't see color, which we know, like, everything wrong with that.
You see color.
You see color. Like, you see, trust me, I definitely see color. I know you see color. You know, I went to a gurdwara back in the Bay Area this past weekend, and it was like a pretty awful experience just because of how like I just got stared at. You know, I felt like I was like right back in India where people were just like, does she know what she's doing? Why are you here? Like, you know, like reminding me that I don't belong or making me feel as though I don't belong, even if it's like with good intention, like, oh, let me teach you how to do these things. Let me show you how to do this. And I'm like, I'm good, bruh. Like, it's been a few years. Like, I'm good. Like, I don't need that. And a lot of times, you know, people stare. I've been followed.
Really?
I've got followed this past weekend in the gurdwara. He did one of those, like, I'm not looking at you. And then every time I turn a corner, I see him. He's like, and then I turn another corner. And then he dips into the bathroom. So at that point, I just waited for him. And I was just, he walks out the bathroom and he's like, all the blood leaves his face. So yeah, I get treated like I'm black even in the gurdwara, even in Sikh spaces. Yeah,
that's so interesting. You would imagine like a minority would have some sort of understanding of, hey, maybe that's not you know the way to treat people.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, but again, I think that's what's so wrong with the whole I don't see color thing.
You know, of course.
The unwillingness to see color and address it. It's kind of the same. I've sort of you know, I came to Sikhi looking for community, looking for like my Sikh Sangat, which is community. And I found that I don't have it yet. Not in the way that I want. Let me be clear. I do have Sangat. I definitely do have community. But I found that like online. Mm. You know what I mean? I found that, yes, at the diverse Gurdwara, but that is still largely white, and they still do the I don't see color thing.
Wait, really? So yeah. There's a lot of white Sikhs?
Oh, there's a lot of white. I said when I first...
Interesting.
When I first
came, so that's less weird, or is it more weird to brown
Sikhs? Okay, for... Oh, you know what? I think it's less weird.
You think?
I think because...
That's interesting.
For the same reason,
me.
I think it's less weird when they see white people in India.
Okay.
And I've been told that. So I went to India for a couple weeks just to visit friends there. And just the, like, everybody was surprised to see me being from America. Now, there are Africans who go to India, right? But for me, they hear my accent and they're immediately like, oh, wait, you're not African, so what's happening here? Like, why are you in India, right? And not necessarily like in a malicious way, just in a very like, this doesn't happen often. Mm-hmm. And I was told that multiple times, like, we don't see Black Americans here.
Interesting.
Like, ever. Even in like most touristy area, which was probably Goa. But yeah, there's a lot of white Sikhs. I joked when I first got to the Gurdwara, I said only in LA can you go practice a religion that is like 90 something percent brown. I mean, that's an arbitrary number, but still be surrounded by white folks. Like there's probably more brown, I mean, white folks there than anything, I think.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is very interesting to me.
It is. And it's, it is absolutely like impacted the way I practice Sikhi here in that Gurdwara, right? I remember something, there was another like shooting, I'm not even gonna try to remember which one, but another like Black person had gotten killed like just the day before. So like it was like, it must have been like a Saturday. And I was like so infuriated, I had so many emotions and I was just like really trying to process that. And I remember, oh, this is a distinct difference because if I was still practicing Christianity and I went to a Black church right now, I'm pretty sure the preacher would bring it up. Mm. And bringing it up just gives you a chance to process, to talk about it, to vent, to be around people who understand, who are going through the same thing. And I knew that if I went to my Gurdwara and everybody there was happy and jolly, like this thing hadn't just happened hours before, I was just gonna be like very upset. I was gonna be pissed. And so I purposely stayed away that Sunday. And I go to my mentor's meditation class every Sunday afternoon, but I purposely didn't go to the Gurdwara that Sunday. I didn't go because it didn't feel safe. I didn't feel like I was gonna be okay in that space the morning after that had happened.
A lot of folks know that hair for Black folks is pretty important. Mm-hmm. And it always has been. And not just in that like, oh, we love our hairstyles. I mean like culturally, deeply rooted. It's deeply rooted in our culture, you know, what our hair communicates, you know. Mm-hmm. It's so important. And I didn't realize how important my hair was to me and my being able to wear it how I want and that being part of my expression and part of my identity and part of my style and such a large part of who I am until I said, can I wear a turban every day? Because that's what Sikhi says, men, women, you're gonna wear a turban every day and you can't cut your hair. And that was tough. Like that was a difficult thing to navigate that honestly I'm still navigating, right? I know that I could not give up aspects of my Black culture for Sikhi. I was unwilling to do that, right? So we were gonna have to figure out how to marry and how to merge this thing. When I first started practicing, I had locks and they were like waist length, which means I had a lot of hair in here and I could not figure out how to tie my turban the way I thought I was supposed to tie it and fit all of my hair in there. So that was a huge frustration. And I was like, you know, I don't know if Guru Nanak was thinking about African hair when he, you know, made this mandate. Like that, I'm like, you know, things are a little bit different. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get all my hair in here and not. So that was a big deal. And when it came time, well, I now have to cut my locks. How does this work with Sikhi? Mm-hmm. And I'm still figuring that out, but I do know that it's just something that like, it's two entities coming together for me. I do know that like Sikhi wasn't, even though all are welcome, it wasn't necessarily created with African culture in mind. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of that. And so I take that into consideration when I'm practicing Sikhi, when I'm practicing my faith, because I'm unwilling to And a lot of Black people, my mentor included, don't have a problem with it, covering their hair every day, not cutting it, whatever. But it's always been such a large part of my identity that I felt stifled. I felt different. I felt less seen, actually, less visible when I was covering my hair every single day. Because I feel like the other Black six I know were ready and willing to sort of like just immerse themselves into Sikhi, which also means taking on parts of Punjabi culture, if we're being honest. And I was like, hey, I see you, Punjabi culture. I respect it. I love it. There are a lot of parallels. There are a lot of overlaps. But also, Black American is a culture, and it's mine. And I don't want to lose it just because I'm practicing this faith that has now, you know, improved my relationship with God. So that's even the social justice thing, all of the other, the queerness thing, the disability thing, I think that part, just being a black woman, and being sick, and being, I guess, I've learned recently that people say that I'm very radical, or like I'm the most radical person they know. And I say that because there are a lot of things that I found other Black six are okay with that I'm not.
Mm.
And so that's been difficult because I often feel like I'm a community of one.
Mm.
Like I'm standing at this intersection by myself, and there's some other people kind of on the, you know, periphery, but ultimately I'm standing at this intersection alone. That's what it feels like a lot of times. So that can be tough, but.
How have Black people reacted to you being sick? Like Black people in America reacted to you being sick?
And so when I told my mom, first I had to tell her I wasn't Christian. So I describe it as like coming out of the religion closet. And I don't mean that to like trivialize. I mean, that's the level of like intensity and like sort of like fear and worry that I had, where I was like, I'm about to tell this Black mother who raised me to be Christian, that I'm not Christian anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the catalyst for that was a family member actually coming out as queer. And so the reason that I'm like leaving is also something that's going to be kind of controversial. So that was a big deal. So that it almost seems like when I told her, she heard, I don't believe in God anymore, all this is crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, right? She kind of panicked. And that tends to be how a lot of older Black folks respond. Now, a lot of Black folks my age, I would say like 20s, 30s, they tend to just be interested and intrigued, like, oh, what is that? How did you get there? They're more curious than anything. I find older Black folks tend to be like worried. It's almost like I've said, oh, I'm not Christian. I'm actually like a devil worshiper. It's like that's what they hear. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not Christian. Actually, I worship Satan on the weekends, and I, you know, I have a cult. Like, it's like their face. Like, you can see it on their face where they're just like, we lost one. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do a lot of advocacy work, and even in the sickle cell community, I do find that I'm having to constantly remind people, like, hey, so we're not all Christian. Like, just to remind people, we're not all Christian here. Like, we're speaking from a place as though we're all Christian. That's that Christian privilege at work here. Or even when we're talking about mental health issues, even in the sickle cell community, and they're saying, well, pray and do this and God and Jesus. And I'm like, by the way, just there's me over here who's not Christian. Like, so from young folks, from people sort of my age, I would say like millennials and younger, they want to know what it is. They're curious. And then by the time we finish talking about it, they're like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
Older folks, folks maybe like my parents' age and up, worry. And most of them, once they worry and they sort of have that look that says, oh, you're a devil worshiper, they sort of shut down, sort of shut off, where they don't, so there's not even really an opportunity for me to then tell them, like, hey, this is what it's about. They're like just uninterested. Like, Christianity is the way, the truth, and the life. Don't you tell me otherwise, because you even telling me about this other religion could ruin my chances of going to heaven. Like, that's the experience.
That's the energy.
That's the energy that I get. So it's just, and again, there's those times where I want to, and I do talk about Sikhi. There's nothing that says we can't talk about Sikhi or tell other people about our experience, and I do, and I talk about it. That's why I'm here, because I do want to talk about it. I would love if more Black folks took an interest in it, if there were more Black six Because I think so many of us, it's perfect for us, especially since so many of the Black people that I'm in community with are social justice oriented. Their work centers, regardless of what avenue it takes, it centers Black people and social justice and social equity. So, and to me, that's what Sikki is really all about at the end of the day.
So you're somebody who identifies as queer, correct?
Yep.
And what does that mean for you specifically?
In terms of gender, I've always been what I know now is gender non-conforming. Definitely identify as androgynous and polyamorous or non-monogamous, but also either bi or pansexual, so dating without regard to gender or that not being a factor that I consider necessarily when I'm dating. So
like, how has that impacted, how has that interfere with your religion? Is it something that you find is more accepted within Sikhi?
So I find that because any religion is made up of its people.
True. Right?
So in that sense, we're still dealing with and fighting and battling some of the same phobias and problems that anybody else in America is, anybody else in the West, anybody else in, you know, colonized places is dealing with the same sort of byproducts of white supremacy, right? But the difference is we have the text to sort of back it up and say, no, that's not right. That's not what our text says. Whereas in Christianity, you sort of have the Bible and you kind of have to fight what the Bible says. Here, it's like, we have text on our side. Mm. We have scripture on our side. We have our guru's teachings on our side. And they preached equality, period, like regardless. And there's no mention of queerness in Sikh texts. And so one might say, well, that doesn't mean that they approved of it or that they were okay with it. But there is actually text out there. There are historical accounts out there that our guru came in contact, or one of our gurus came in contact with somebody who was trans. Made no mention of that. Like, they talked about him wearing jewels and doing all these things to attract a husband. And the guru says, instead of saying, no, you shouldn't be attracting a husband, he says, jewels are not what's going to attract your husband, right? He didn't tell him the husband was the problem. He said, all these jewels and all these other things that you're doing, that's the problem. Mm. So there's no mention in terms of, they do mention color, they do mention caste, they do mention religion, they don't mention queerness, but they do mention other things that are not okay, if that makes sense,
like,
right?
Things relating to queerness?
Not relating to queerness. So I feel like I'm not explaining this well. So there are things in Sikh text, in the Sikh scripture, that affirm equality across all identities, regardless of identities, mm-hmm. right? And while there's no mention specifically of queerness, either way, like negative, positive, affirming, or saying that it's wrong, there are other things that they have said are wrong. So it's not that they never encountered queerness, and that if they, so some people make the argument, well, if they were alive today, they would not be okay with this. It's just that there were no queers back then. Like, there were no queer people back then. Well, we know that that's not true.
That's silly.
We know that that's not true. So, everything in the text, everything in history is on our side in that sense. That, you know, regardless of your gender identity, regardless of your sexual orientation, regardless of your color, your caste, your religion, you're welcome and you're equal. You know, you don't need to be saved. You don't need to be changed. You don't need to deviate and do this. In fact, when our text speaks of marriage, it speaks of two genderless souls.
Interesting.
It's specific in mentioning genderless, that the souls are genderless and God is genderless, right? So when I refer to God, I use feminine pronouns. Because if God is genderless and we have to choose some pronouns because that's what our language does, why not feminine ones?
True.
And that's fine. Like, that's perfectly okay. That's how I see God, right? So that doesn't mean it's not an issue. I have had an issue even with, like, my mentor, with some other folks in my sangat, in my community, who have made claims or been teaching. The gender binary is something that annoys me to no end, and it is pretty big in a lot of the teachings
in the gurdwara that I'm at, in the sangat that I'm at.
So you're saying that there's a distinct difference between, it's similar to, you know, I had a conversation with a gay man who was Christian, and he would say that like there's issues with like the Bible itself, in his view, doesn't, you know, say anything against homosexuality, but then he goes to like the church and the church will say something against homosexuality. So it's kind of like the same thing.
Same thing. And even though, you know, there are a lot of things that I've found that a lot of younger Sikhs are challenging now, are speaking up about, but things like men sit on one side and women sit on the other side.
Oh, so it's gendered.
Yeah, so, but there's equality of genders, right? But then why is there this separation? Or like men's shoes go here and women's shoes go here. Why?
I was gonna ask you, because the only familiarity that I have with Sikhi is that men are supposed to wear turbans and not cut their hair, if I understand
it's correctly. It's supposed to be all Sikhs.
Okay, so everyone wears turbans, so no one cuts their hair.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Okay.
But what is sort of culturally accepted, because this is where culture and religion sort of, they have this like overlap, right? There's these blurred lines. Culturally, what is normal, or what's the cultural norm, what's accepted, is that men wear turbans and don't cut their hair. Women maybe don't cut their hair, but don't necessarily have to wear turbans. Now, when you go to the gurdwara, everybody covers their hair. You have to cover your hair before you step into the gurdwara. You take your shoes off, you cover your hair.
Why is that? Like, why cover the hair? Like, what's the significance with the hair?
The hair. So the hair has to do with, and even not cutting your hair, that has to do with keeping yourself, keeping your body as God created it, as God designed it.
Interesting.
Right?
So things like surgeries and stuff, like that's like against the teachings.
Well, I mean, if it was like, I guess, cosmetic, then I would guess so. Not necessarily like, oh, I need this because of my health, because of whatever, right?
But
altering your body in ways that, you know, God did not create.
So like tattoos, piercings, like that's all against it. Wow. Mm-hmm.
But you're gonna find Sikhs with tattoos.
Of course.
You're gonna find Sikhs with haircuts. It's kind of the same thing. It's not different in that like Christianity says one thing in the Bible, but we generally practice and sort of accept this set of rules, right? It's kind of the same thing. Yeah, so we keep our hair covered. So the turban, it has a few purposes. Part of it is, yes, to keep your hair covered, your crown covered. That's, you know, it has to do with the energy that we get from the sun and sort of keeping that. It's almost like your life force is like what I like to call it, right? Like if you have this energy that comes from the sun, it's your life force, so your turban keeps it right there for you, keeps you charged up all day. And then your turban is also supposed to make you stand out to other people. It's supposed to make you identifiable to other people.
Okay.
So if somebody sees a turban, they're supposed to say, oh, that's a Sikh. I can go to this Sikh for help.
Okay. Is that the reason to go to them for help? Like you mentioned the sword and them helping people. Is that part of it? So it's almost like a superhero cape in a way.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep. In the beginning, Guru Nanak had Sikhs wear turbans just to sort of counter what was happening with the caste system there. So then,
what was happening with the caste system?
So then, back in India, only like royals, only people of a certain caste wore turbans. Like you were not supposed to wear a turban. It indicated a certain like level, a certain status, right? And so again, trying to get rid of all of these sort of social stratifications, he was like, not only are Sikhs gonna wear turbans, you're gonna wear two turbans. You're gonna wear one underneath, and then you're gonna wear one outside.
Wow.
And then the other thing, which I'm going to be honest, I don't know that this is necessarily in the teaching, but this is what I've found is true for me. And I found this to be true for me, and I've since heard other Sikhs say it. But for me, when I wear my turban, it's a reminder because I can always feel it, right? Especially because it's not something I'm used to wearing. So I haven't gotten used to it, and I don't wear it every single day. It's a reminder. And so in some weird way, it does make me feel more secure. It's like a hug for my head, right? But it's this reminder that's like, you know, if there's a time where I'm about to get angry, or if there's a time where I'm frustrated or whatever it is, when I have my turban on, it allows me this opportunity to sort of check in with myself, like ground myself again, right? And again, I don't know that that's necessarily in the text or in the scripture and teachings, but it's what I experienced in the very beginning. And then a few months ago, started hearing other Sikhs say that the same is true for them, so. Thank you.
In what ways would you say that your disability has intersected with your religion?
So far, not much has happened within the context of Sikhi that hasn't already happened in the context of just being disabled in America, right? Mm. So we're all supposed to sit on the floor. There are no like different levels. Everybody's on the same level. It's a symbol of equality. But sometimes if I'm having problems physically, which means I can't sit on the floor, and I need to get a chair, which there are chairs available usually for older folks or disabled folks. Well, they can't see my disability. But that's not something that doesn't happen in other spaces, right? In other disability designated spaces or things like that. I think what is maybe amplified is the fact that I have what some folks refer to as a black disease, which is sickle cell. Mm. It affects mostly, especially in America, mostly black people, like predominantly black people by and large. And folks of African and Mediterranean descent, Middle Eastern descent as well. But in America, it affects mostly black people. And for the longest, they thought it affected only black people. Well, that comes with its own set of everything that comes from anti-blackness, mm-hmm. right? And so when we're bringing that, again, I can't bring sickle cell into an equation and not also bring race into it. Mm. And so if we're having these problems surrounding race already in this space and in this context, it's just like another layer of that, of more of the same sort of like issues where I'm having to like either break these things down, unpack these things, do some teaching and some educating, or just kind of like tap out and say, not today, you know? But that's probably one of the easier ones to navigate. And that might just have to do with the fact that I was born with this chronic illness, with this disability. So that's the one thing that's just always been like, there is no me without this disability, this chronic illness. It affects every aspect of my life, whether I'm having a flare-up or not. I used cannabis for my disability for a while, and Sikhi says to not really be consuming or partaking in substances that alter your mind. Cannabis does that. That's a problem. Like, is that going to be a problem that I'm, using cannabis? Because guess what? I'm not going to stop using it. On a good day, it completely shapes the way I do things, what I take with me, the fact that I take a jack, all these things. So that's probably one of the easier ones to navigate, I would say.
Yeah. So if someone is curious to find out more information, especially as someone trying to be an ally to people in their community who are sick, what are some resources that you would suggest?
If you just want to know more in general, there's a space called SickNet. And again, really a Google search is probably your best bet. Because if you get into sort of like the religious text, again, a lot of that is not in English. Mm-hmm. But if you're really curious, as in like, wow, I want to know more, but I also think this might be something I want to consider for myself, I would actually suggest talking to Six. Whether that's via Reddit, there's a subreddit that I kind of got into and kind of sat back and observed for a while because there were questions I had.
All right, Smalls, thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find out more about you, more about what you're doing, what your religion is, your sickle cell experiences? Where can they go to find out all that stuff?
I am hella swanky all over the internet. So hella, like the Bay Area slang term, and then swanky with two Ks all over the internet, on YouTube, everywhere. And that most of my work, the stuff that I produce, the artwork that I do, it can be found on YouTube. And like I said, I'm every social media platform there is. Hit me up. I love talking about Sikhi. And I love talking about being black, so.
Perfect. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us. If you guys want to continue to learn, share, and grow, please subscribe to this channel and get more videos just like this. Also, please consider supporting me on Patreon if you like this specific project, because I want to make it bigger and better than it already is. All right, I'll see you guys next week. Bye.